I'm always a big fan at any place I operate, but that's the next guy's problem.
A problem passed on is a problem solved.
Quit your whining.
I think that was targeted at you, Greg.
Who invited this guy?
But these are only things you can do in a small town.
There are people who complain that, oh, it's too hard, it's too tight, there's not enough room.
I wonder why I haven't been back there in a year.
Quit your whining.
Those guys are going to be really pissed. And Wednesday night at bowling, he's going to catch hell all night.
You're listening to The Crossing Gate, the official podcast of the Twin Cities Division of the National Model Railroad Association. The topics and discussions are about the world's greatest hobby, model railroading. Here are your hosts, Thomas Gazier and Ken Zeska. This episode of the Crossing Gate podcast is brought to you by the clock that makes a train sound every hour. Does your family know you are a train nut? Do your friends know you're a foamer? Well, then they need to know about the clock that makes train sounds. They can get you one of these for your next birthday or even as a Christmas present. Yes, you'll enjoy hours and hours of a variety of various trains and railroad sounds, such as diesel horns. American steam whistles. British steam whistles. Defect detectors.
Stop your train. Stop your train. Dragging equipment. Detector malfunction.
Stupid dispatchers and angry conductors.
Allegheny
CO5.
In your current location, is there any way for you guys to cut away and tie down that power?
Say what?
In your current location, is there any way for you to cut away from the 12G? I'm going to have one of these eastbound trains pick you guys up and drop you off at the head end of the 12G so we can get this thing down to Rose to get swapped.
Not gonna happen without a helper on the rear, pal. I don't know where you came from, but you've never been out here.
Clearly. I'm just asking if it was possible. That's why I'm asking.
No, and you should not be stopping these trains on this mountain. There's a mountain up here.
And every other imaginable obnoxious train noise you can think of, including railroad crossing bells. Enough already. Sheesh. More bells? You will hear these every hour of the day. So make sure you tell your family and friends you want one of these for your train room. Train clocks can be found online, at retail stores, and at train shows on tables where other train nuts have been told by their spouse to get rid of that obnoxious thing. That was a good sponsor. Oh, look, it's 3 o'clock. I said knock it off, Quasimodo!
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Crossing Gate Podcast. This episode, I'm joined by Joe Binnish.
Hello.
Mike Jordan.
Hello.
William Sampson.
Hello, hello.
Greg Dahl.
Hello.
And Ken Zeska.
Good evening.
There we go. And I'm your referee for this episode, and we're going to be talking about off-spots on your layout for operations. And off-spots seem to be something that was popular from the 30s, 40s, and 50s up even into the year 2000 until things needed more security and computers could dictate where your customers, how many cars they got. I'll go to you, William. You have like a more modern layout than all of us. How do you handle off-spots in the 80s? 1980s.
I mean, there's a lot of different ways, I think, looking at the off spot of not enough car capacity at the industry itself. So then a car is then spotted just on a track over, which is just outside the industry's normal proper. I've got essentially one track that goes in. There's two industries on that one track. And then there's a track adjacent to it that allows for essentially 100 feet of scale cars to be able to be set just aside. And either industry can kind of flex and use that track. But the other form that I've got is actually elevator T, where you've got track that is just outside the elevator. It's actually the second one from what would be kind of the shed track. And that track itself is where the railroad goes in and switches those cars in and out. And then the industry will actually be the ones that handle the cars, switching them into their shed. So the railroad isn't allowed to shove cars in through the shed and has to be handled kind of as a separate entity. So from an off-spot perspective, the overflow from the railroad itself, it ends up being Freesman, which is actually an homage to Gary Freesman. I call it Freesman, but Freesman is the actual company. And the second track over is an overflow track because the next track that pushes in is going into the lumber. Well, they can't put both cars at the one door, so they are allowed to, if they had extra capacity, put it at the second one. Now, I don't know the history of if they used that expansion between cars where you've got two cars side by side. Joe, I know on your railroad, you've got the ability of multiple tracks across, but you wouldn't necessarily call that particular setup an off spot. That would be kind of sharing two tracks and they had those bridges between the cars. Is that correct?
Yeah, I count if you spot a car next to another car, we'll say box cars in this case because that makes the most sense, and you put the bridge down, I count those cars as spotted, and then the little HO scale people can go and quote unquote unload the car. So that's a spot. An off spot to me is when you show up to Red Owl and there are eight spots there for refrigerator or box cars, and you have three more to go in. Then are, you know, there are already eight cars there and you have three more to go in. Those three cars are off spotted. The way the trackage is laid out, and I follow the prototype, the way the trackage is laid out in that alley is those three cars can be set off and be close to be unloaded. And now that job is switched three times a day. So they would get those cars in there fairly quickly once the other ones are unloaded. Other places, the car is may sit, like Tom said, for a day or two. Until they get, you know, up at the brewery that I have, they have only two loading spots. And so those cars, those reefers would sit and wait until they got reefers loaded. And then the Northeast job would shove those two new empty cars in to be unloaded.
So on the Northern Pacific, they would spot cars close. You know, if freight was coming through and they had a car and there was no room for it, they'd leave it in the town. And then the next train may come by, and if there was the ability then, they may put it in spot, and it would be called a constructive placement. And that was there was room for that on the conductor's report. Some of the situations I use that for is there's one spot for a distribution center, and if the distribution center is not quite finished unloading, and I have a car for it, well, I don't want to drag that car around because I'm at the end of the branch line. So I'll place it there and consider it a spot. And then I go to the grain elevator. And again, there's one grain loading and one grain clean out track. If I've already spotted some extra box cars there, because you have to have a lot of box cars around for the grain rush, because they've got to pump them into a box car. They can't pump them onto the ground. Those are all considered off spots in the local agent is then going to give the crew instructions, because in my railroad, if a crew goes out to the end of the line, their switch list only shows them what they're bringing out. And they don't know what they're going to do in town until they get into town and put the conductor up by the station where the local agent can give him instructions. And again, it's a small town railroad. It's out in the middle of nowhere, a long way from the flagpole. So they're going to do a lot of things for the customers that strict union accounting wouldn't necessarily allow. And so they may push a couple cars, extra cars, past the loading dock and throw in a couple cars there and then leave cars that are not in the cleanout. But maybe the grain elevator will send a crew down there to start cleaning that car out so that it's ready to go in. If they have a car for the distribution center and they aren't quite done with it, They may push it so that off the spot, because it's not by the loading door, but it's still by the loading dock, and let the distribution center wrestle with it. I also leave lots of headroom on my spots or my sidings. So if there's a siding that's got two spots, there's enough room for probably two cars ahead of that from the main line. So somebody can spot something there. They could even in some cases spot something there as a team track. But these are only things you can do in a small town. You wouldn't want to do that in the middle of an industrial area. And again, like you were saying, you can't do that now, Tom, because of all the security concerns. And those just didn't exist back in the 40s and 50s and early 60s out in western Minnesota.
Yeah, true. I mean, there are a lot of high-tech things going on now. So, Mike, you have an active staging yard. Do your crews know that when they're building their train based on what ordered, you know, for the customers, do they know what cars will be at, like, say, the packing district? You're heading over there and you're like, okay, I need these five cars, and you go over there and there's three already there. Will they know about the cars that are in the packing district?
Not until they get there. Depending on the sequence of the car movements, they might have to sit off on a siding until there's room to set them in place. You'd have to call it active off-spotting, because there just isn't room at that particular time to set them out. During the sequence of the operation, there might be enough car movements where they can put them in place. Even with general freight, small railroad, mid-50s, the branch line has its own yard. So if there isn't a place to set a car, it just goes back to the branch yard and sits until room opens up and you can move the car out to the industry. You can manipulate the cars so that there's always a place for them. But in talking to Tom Hokanson, he just grabs the car card, puts a waybill in the car card, and if there isn't room, it just sits there until the cycle goes through to there's room. And he might have four cars to the same industry, and it might take four operating sessions before those cars work their self through the system. He does have a track for those non-spotted cars at the industry area.
Do you find that Tom uses those are empty cars?
It depends. That sometimes they're loaded. You know, there might be three cars sitting in his industrial area, and that industry only has one spot. So it takes a while to cycle through those. Sometimes they're just in the way. And
yeah.
I think it was Dan Doza that said that you never set or move a car. You only move an opening. So opening is there in between the cars, you're shuffling that opening until, realistic or not, sometimes that off spot gives you more interest in your operations.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Greg, as another modern modeler, where do you use off spots on the Missouri Northern in the 80s?
I have off spots in two places. One is at the Falstaff Brewery. There's a couple tracks that used to be used that are no longer part of the brewery. What happens over there is the local switcher will come out with all of the grain, barley, et cetera, hops. But it's not until he gets to the brewery that he talks to the brewery manager and finds out exactly what grain cars they want. So you arrive at the brewery, the plant manager will tell you, I need these two, you know, I need grain, I need hops, whatever. And then it's up to you to take the oldest cars, which are more likely the older ones are probably sitting in the off spot. And if you don't have any rice in the off spots, then you have to see if hopefully there's rice in your train. And then you try to satisfy what the brewery manager wants. And then any grain cars that are left over, I'm using grain in the generic sense, that are left over, those get shoved into the off spot. So the next time it comes around, you know, those cars will probably be used first. But it's all dependent upon what the brewery wants at that point. The other place I have it is more in the traditional model railroad sense, where it's over at Cary Avenue, where cars just might not fit. There's too many cars for the warehouse, so those cars get left in the siding. I have a siding that's basically used as a runaround at that point, and those cars just get left there. And in fact, that job actually starts over there. And so the cars that are left in that, using air quotes, off spots, those cars are actually spotted first. That guy works those industries, finds the pulls, works the off spots, works his way back to the yard, and then comes back out. And that's where he ends as well. So instead of everybody starting in the yard all at one time, that guy starts over there.
Did you have a question on that too, Greg, you were going to ask about?
I was interested in Mike. I know you faithfully model the produce industry. Did they ever have tracks? Because I can imagine, you know, the icing dock would be full almost, you know, all the time, or quite often you'd be trying to ice so many cars. So did they ever lay tracks that would say, okay, we know there's going to be a problem at this point, or there's going to be a bottleneck, so I'll have a track here that I can shove some reefers on until they can get the other ones iced? Or was with it? Mike, you're on mute.
He's really putting together a good story, though.
Boy, let's hear what he's saying. There you go.
During harvest time, they would, let's say you had three spots at a produce plant, they might bring out six cars, spot three, and then set three off to the side. And then when the crew came back, they would pull the three empties or the three loads and then put the three empties in and then take the three loads with them back to the yard. So there was a lot of movement of the cars, and they knew from experience that, especially at harvest, how many cars they would need at each industry. Now, the PFE was a little bit different in that each packing plant would call the local agent, and then the local agent would know that they need 12 cars or 18 cars or whatever it was. You touched on a good subject about the agent. When you get to the agent, like at the brewery, the train crew comes out, they know that they're going to switch the brewery, but they don't know exactly what cars have to be pulled and pushed. This is a great place for a situation card or someone that takes that agent role and starts moving cars per your own discretion versus just going to the set out hold box and moving those cars. Those are all things that force you to have a set out or a, you know, an off spot area.
You sabotaged me again, Mike. I was trying to make that point earlier. That is key. And all you guys mentioned that you don't know until you either get to the town and talk to the agent, or you get to the industry and talk to the foreman. And that's something typically we don't model, or it's done by the staging ferry, so that the box, the set out hold box or the switch list is already set up for the train crews.
So I don't have a staging ferry. I have a produce broker.
Same thing.
I don't wear lavender, damn it.
It's a tutu.
So, William, you've operated on a number of layouts. Your father's, of course, is a, you know, great layout. You're in JMRI now, but I know others have car cards. Let's get to the modeling question here. Should you have a car card box for off spots?
My personal opinion on the handling of off spots, again, if we're going to look at it from the prototypical perspective, is that the car is actually being spotted off site or in an elevator's instance, because that's what the actual move is calling for, because they're going to get cars that will eventually be moved in via a critter or something of that nature. If you're in JMRI, if you're in a switch list, or you're in a computerized program, you're looking at that merely as a move for a capacity of a car. Now, on a prototype side, when I worked at General Mills, now this is early 2000s, they had a shed that we would shove cars into. Four of those spots were going to be for flour loading. A couple of them actually were used for car cleaning before they got loaded with flour. And then they had six spots that they could take just empty, you know, grain cars that were going to be filled with the hulls of the oats. So byproduct. Now, outside the shed, there's another track that the switch could always get clean cars. They could shove them in there. And if we were already at full capacity, they would have them sitting right there at the ready. Now, did that allow us then to then grab, you'd grab the critter or the switch in the evening, could come out and then take your pulls and then have those ones that were already set out and then stick them into the industry? That's the way I would see the move. So if you're using JMRI and your track capacity is basically four cars, let's say, and you want to use off spot, you'd tell the system, actually it's six cars that go into that industry, two spots are off spot. So if it ever filled its four, it would then populate and show the operator those are off spots and those will get dumped in that off spot position. So the next time the cycle went through and JMRI looked for new cars, it will look at off spots first. It'll throw those two cars into the elevator, and it may give you two new ones and also two new off spots that are a fresh set of cars that were coming in, you know, on a move. So I don't personally see a need for the car cards themselves in the switch list capacity. But on my dad's railroad, when we did use car cards, the car cards themselves did, in fact, have a spot that was basically hold or off spot. And the off spot just meant that it was excess capacity. But his off spot was not a assigned area. It was a location that you could put a car off spot. Maybe it was on the switch lead. Maybe it was on over, you know, across a track in your yard. And then that car is sitting there. The operator pulls that hold card and looks at it and goes, oh, this hold is now got to be spotted. So it would be have to be the operator between sessions that would move that card over into the next time actually being set out. So it's there's a little bit of a dance there, but do any of you guys that are using car cards have a specific pocket for off spots? Joe, you're nodding your head yes, or you've operated perhaps on one that has.
Yes, I do. I do, and I also have a slot for hold cars. So that is a mechanism that I use when I'm restaging to say, all right, I don't want to move this car, so I'm going to put it in the hold pocket. And then off spots, when the crew arrives, they're supposed to spot those cars before they spot anything that's in their train.
Correct. I'm with you on that. Now, do you allow an operator to set that off spot anywhere, or do you have a specific assigned area for the off spot?
Anywhere. In the area where they're switching, anywhere is fine. You know,
Same way we did it.
Yeah, and you kind of, obviously not on the main line. And preferably not on the siding, but you know, if it's, you can tuck it away on another industry spur lead, or a couple of the spots have yards that, you know, the local delivery yards that they can put cars in. And then you just match up the track that car is sitting on in that little yard. If you're going to leave it in the industry area, then you just drop it in the off spot. Next crew should be able to find that car just by looking close to the various industries they deal with.
How does the crew know that they're supposed to spot the off spots first?
Because I have told them that. The
superintendent okay, so when do you tell them that? Because I've operated your layout and I've never heard that.
Because you're always in the yard.
I'm always eating a donut probably, but it's not.
Yeah, you got to branch out apparently, Tom.
I'm working with that.
You're right.
Lake Street. So I've never heard that. And there's usually off spots down where the freight warehouse where I like to work and things like that. But it makes sense, but I've never heard anybody enforce that rule. And William says that's their rule too. So maybe.
So, well, once again, I have failed you.
Yes.
Arlen Tietel had flour mill on his railroad, and he painted a yellow dot on his track, and the first wheel had to touch that yellow dot, which said that the car was lined up to be loaded. Well, it was a long lead, and he might have three cars on that lead, but only one of them was on that yellow dot. So then he would have an off-spot slot. So when you're the local switcher and you came into that town, you knew that you would push off the car that spotted and push the next car onto that yellow spot and then move the car card from off spot to spot. And then at his direction, when there were so many cars, then you could pick up all the loads and take them either east or west. So there was what I would call an active off spot, because the capacity for that flour mill was they could only load one car at a time.
How did he get that rule out to people? Was that written down or in your training?
A booklet of instructions.
Okay.
And you would read what you did in that particular town.
Sure.
And he also, a lot of people use skewers for uncoupling, but he also used a skewer for a motivator.
You would
learn fairly quickly.
Multi-purpose.
That's right. Yeah.
So, more cost-effective.
Cost-effective, yeah. Hey, Greg, so we've been talking about this, and it seems to me that agricultural products make a great off-spot. And I'm trying to think of other ones, but you have an auto industry. I can't imagine the auto industry having an off-spot unless it was like paint or empties or something. So what layouts have you been on, and where do you see off-spots? Is it mostly agricultural, you know, grain coppers and such?
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about this even before the podcast, right? You're not going to stick a car, you know, a loaded auto rack somewhere and have it an off-spot that's going to be picked up later, because you know, all your Ferraris are going to be stolen by the end of the day. So, you know, we're not going to.
Your fire trucks.
I would think empties is probably the most likely scenario, right? Where you just want to get them out of the yard. And I'm just projecting my model railroad thoughts. Maybe real railroads don't work this way. But if I got a whole slew of empty beer cars, I may want to get them shoved somewhere, so they're not just clogging up a yard track, which I can use for sorting cars that are making money. So if I can get them over to the brewery on some empty track they might have, even if they're not going in for loading quite yet, that would probably be the most likely place I would see something like that. So mainly empties, and I would think, yeah, any low-value product. You know, nobody's going to steal a car of coal, so I don't have to worry about that. If I'm going to spot a couple loaded, you know, coal hoppers down at Great Lakes Coal and Dock, they can get to them later. But, you know, things like we talked about before we started talking here, I'm not going to spot a chemical car either, right? Hydrochloric acid or something down there. Oh, that's great, until some 14-year-old decides to open the vents and see what happens.
Or worse. Yeah, yeah.
That's self-regulating.
But, you know, so other products, it would be, you know, painful for the customer. Like I talked to, I'm a lumber yard, and I can unload one lumber flat, and you brought me two, and I unload get the guys out there in the morning. We got it all unloaded, and then we're staring out the gate like we're staring at the car like a cow looking at a gate, wishing we could get that load of 2x4s in here instead of tomorrow or when the next wave freight comes. So I don't know if you model something with off spots, should you keep it to products that maybe aren't so timely. Ken, what do you think about that?
I think one of the things that we have to consider here is where we're talking, because if you're talking in an industrial area, it's one reality. But if you're talking a branch line, the reality is totally different. And I'll give you a few examples. One would be during the grain rush, they're going to be pushing boxcars out there as fast as possible. And it may be that your switch crew will go in there and spot cars and then go do a lot of other work before they can leave town. The agent says, you've got to take those loads out and put two more empties in there. But by the way, those loads are not billed to the customer yet, so they're going to be floaters, so leave them right there. And the same thing you might end up with, I've got a tank car full of fuel oil, and the team track down on the end where the nice concrete parking ramp is already loaded with something. So I want you to put the fuel oil down the team track halfway, they're still going to be able to get in there with a truck and empty it. Don't worry about it. And as the example I made with the distribution center and how those things get built, remember, none of this is happening on computers or back at headquarters. All the billings and all the separate moves are all handled by the local agent. And so you're not necessarily going to get charged for a constructive placement or anything else. The local agent's taking care of the people he lives with, and he knows that if he doesn't take good care of the grain crew, the grain yard, that those guys are going to be really pissed, and Wednesday night at bowling, he's going to catch hell all night. So he doesn't want that. So how things work in a small town in the 50s and 60s is going to be radically different than how it works in a industrial area in the 80s or 90s. And I'm not sure, William, is that, do you think a lot of that organic sort of stuff happened down on the Hiawatha line?
I think a lot of it is obviously a product of how much these mills were getting in. And I'm just going to give you guys, this is actual MN, this is the Minnesota Commercial nowadays, or the Minnesota Transfer back then, but it's their actual paperwork. And it reads as such. It says, the following suggestions are intended to provide all train and engine crews the simplest method of providing efficient and timely service to the Atkinson and Nokomis Mill. Each crew will follow these general guidelines. It will be easier for crews that follow you to provide a timely and efficient service. This will be easier for the customer to maintain track, their assigned cars, and cars for unloading. This will also make it easier for the customer to assist us in providing the most efficient switch-in service. There are two elevators that they talk about. It's Nokomis Mill and Atkinson. It's one, keep wheat cars are holding for unloading on tracks one and two for the ease of placement into the mill. Now, we talk about off spots, and they refer to pool 200 cars, which is on the backside of Nokomis. Keep two cars on the extension track when possible. Now, Nokomis, in geographic purposes, is a little bit further north than the Atkinson Mill. So the Atkinson Mill, which is another block south, has four spots on what's called track one. And they are there. And now here's what it reads. It reads on the rule six. I won't go through all of them, but it's tracks one and two hold four cars max, often leave Nokomis back track cars on track one. So they would leave four cars off spot down from Nokomis, the mill itself. So to be able to follow along with all that's taken place there, these guys were leaving cars around the mills that were readily available, whether it's for the next switch or maybe even a critter, to be able to grab cars. Now, I see that as an off spot, but now I'm reading this and you look at it, well, if you're at Nokomis and then you go, well, Atkinson's down a block, there are four cars down there for us. And they're like, well, yeah, they're already all lined up and ready to be shoved into track, which is the back track at Nokomis, but they're sitting down by Atkinson. Now, we know some of the guys that operate on the Hiawatha, and they do have a few cars that they store just north of Nokomis. And those cars, it looks like a little yard. And those cars, again, are going to be readied cars that are going to work their way into the mill. But are we seeing those even still as off spots? Because as the paperwork reads here, they're saying set up four cars for the next switch to come in and shove them down on that track that's actually a block south of this elevator. And the reason why is they actually shove into the back end of Nokomis. But when you start looking at some of those things, does it get confusing in operations? If you implemented this on a model railroad, to expect an operator to look down to the next mill and see four cars that are sitting there that are intended to be shoved into the back track at Nokomis? Does that start, if you're taking the prototype, now all that stuff I read was the prototype's rules. Are you too deep in the weeds at that point? I personally think it's kind of neat. I think it's kind of cool to run those type of moves. But is that then, are we getting into a conversation of saying, what's the difficulty level we want to introduce? Because as Tom mentioned earlier, do you want to note and call out that an off spot on Joe's Railroad is supposed to be moved first? How do I know that? On JMRI, it's blueprint. So the type that's blue on anything I've got are off spot within an industry or around the industry that you need to move into a position, but it's going to tell you to do that. But do you guys think that off spots that start to kind of get away from the industry, like in this case, Nokomis, it's a block south of you, but you're setting up for the next move so that off spot is actually kind of playing into the next, you know, operating session?
I think one thing you have to keep in mind is that your operators on a model railroad aren't operating it every day like they are on the prototype. On the, I love the flavor. I love the idea. I'm just thinking you've got a guy who comes over and maybe he works that job twice a year, you know, even if you operate every month, you know, maybe he doesn't get it, you know, he doesn't get assigned to that job, you know, twice, three times a year. So every 3-4 months, I got to remember these rules. So it's something to keep in mind.
Well, that's where you write it down, though.
Well, we don't like reading, Joe.
No, nobody reads anything, Joe.
I think half the people fell asleep when I read that instruction.
I don't even know what you said.
Hieroglyphics? I don't know.
I was hoping there wasn't a test because I'm not.
There's math?
Now, this wouldn't work in the case of your example there, Will, but the Canadian Grain Board put out a great film years ago about the operations of a prairie mill. And they showed the loading a boxcar, and then the mill operator went out there with what looked like a push bar, but it had a little foot on it. He went down and he put it underneath the wheel, and it got the car rolling, and he rolled it out of the way. Then he went back and he got an empty, started that one up and pushed it down to the loading spot, and then he started filling that one up. So some of that, you know, in between operations or even while they're operating, you can go there as the superintendent and get your little pry bar out and push some cars into position and then tell the local agent, hey, get a hold of that crew and tell them that the mill is finished loading that car and now they've got to go get it. And so before they can leave, they've got this other additional spot that's or job that's been put on. But that's similar to what you could do on an interchange track. Lots of fun things I think that can add flavor.
That guy must have been very strong to be able to move that car with just a pry.
There's a hill, Joe. You just got to get it rolling.
No, I've seen those. They put them under the wheel. I've seen those those car movers. I've got photos and stuff of that, but it's crazy. But then again, you have to have space. I mean, if you have an industry, like I said, a lumber yard that holds one car, they can't move the other one in if there's no space. They have to be pull the empty and bring the load in again.
But is that a question then, Tom, on capacity that we have for a model railroad,
right,
too? Because is it a four car? Like, how many cars does the prototype get versus our truncated version? And then is that off spot a nuisance to people, or is it nuanced? Do you like that? Like, as Greg said, the flavor of adding something in. But do we get ourselves into trouble by trying to introduce it? Because I think it can be used in different applications. As like I said, if there's a track that's a little further down that you could spot cars at, but you better make it clear that the guy is looking down there to be getting cars from that location. Otherwise, it might become confusing.
Do you guys think, and I'll ask Mike this, I'll go to Mike. Do you guys feel that as you evolve operations on your layout or layout owners, there's less and less off spots? Because I see the initial startup, and we've talked about this on a few layouts, of the 50 pounds of mud in a 10 pound sack, right? And so, okay, and then 40 pounds and 30 and then, okay, maybe I got 12 pounds of mud and a little bit off spots. Mike, have you ever seen that evolution, or do people plan for these off spots?
Two sides to that coin. One, you want to buy cars and you put cars in your railroad and your railroad is plugged. And so then these off spots are there. But then as you work through the system, the off spots become less intrusive. But like Greg's brewery, part of what makes switching that brewery more interesting is the off spots, because you've looked at your car cards, you kind of had an idea of how you're going to do it until you get to the brewery, and then all of a sudden, you know, you've got to change your idea because they need rice car spotted right away so that their production can keep going. So you have to pull a car, like Greg said, out of off spot or out of your train and set that. So off spots are kind of like the fourth pocket. So you can have set out, hold, pickup, and set out is your fourth pocket that adds flavor and interest to that switching operation. You don't necessarily want to overdo it, but I think that it's a nice way to just add a little bit more interest to some switching operations. I kind of like it.
Is that the shortcut, Mike, during ops when you're like, I don't want to move these cars. Throw them an off spot.
Well, it's easier doing that than flipping the waybill.
Yeah, that's the favorite one right there.
That leads to a lot of carpal tunnel.
Yeah.
Waybills.
So, you know, and Greg's railroad is set up for that. And like Ken was said, you know, he's a branch line. So there were a lot of railroad rules that were put into Dave Hamilton's geographical bender. And, and you know, just like you said, you know, if you're going to go bowling with a bunch of guys that own the grain elevator, you know, who are you going to take care of on Thursday morning? So
that's right.
You know, so these, and especially during a harvest, you know, they would much rather plug every track in their small town with empties than to have to wait for an empty boxcar to load. So,
right. Because boxcars could get to be pretty hard to find. The Northern Pacific and the Soo Line used to put in requests to the AR to have Eastern Roads send back their boxcars so they would have enough cars for the grain rush, because they had boxcars in good shape. And by the late 50s and 60s, the Eastern Roads, which had been doing deferred maintenance and everything else, didn't have those anymore. All their boxcars were all rotted up, so they were stealing anything they could.
I got a question, though. So like the lumberyard example, so you off-spot a bulkhead flat of all this lumber. Who's paying for that car while it sits there? Is the lumberyard stuck even though it's sitting outside their gate and they're not unloading it?
Well, see, that's the thing about modern railroad of following the money and how embargoes work. They don't have to pay, modern days, until the car is placed.
Right.
Right. But also, maybe I should take that back. Once the car is placed, then they're not paying for it. If it's sitting, you know, in a railroad yard, they're paying the per diem.
You know, the railroad is.
The customer is. So
really,
like, we have a chemical company and they'll order in 30 tank cars. We can only give them 8. So while they sit in our yard, they're still paying us because it's on our property. The only way
they're using your yard as a storage facility.
And that's what annoys the railroads. And that's why the railroads will put what they call an embargo on a company. We had a customer in Wisconsin that was getting steel I-beams, lots and lots of steel I-beams on these flat cars. And there were so many coming in and they could only unload like 3 a day. And we'd bring them 6 because we could fit 6 on their track, but the rest would pile up in the yard. We said, no, no more. We're not even going to pick them up from wherever you're interchanging them or the factory. We're going to embargo you until we get these all unloaded. Huh. And so, yeah, we don't want off spot because even though you're collecting money for it, you know, once again, like I said, the customer, like Greg says, you're looking out at your load of lumber. You're looking out at your steel beams you can't unload. It's a no-win situation. Like you said, we've talked tonight, and basically it's all been agriculture. I'm just curious, on any other layout, what other products would you not deliver? I know it's empties and agricultural products, but scrap or something?
Well, coal in the 50s, you know, every town had a coal distribution, or every industry had a coal for their power plant. On John O'Brien and Arlen Teetle's, if you could only spot one car, then the other 4 cars of coal just sat in the town yard until car at the spot was emptied.
But did each train bring another 4 more? Or did John have that built in where one car every other session or something?
Placement of the waybills in the hoppers I don't think was thought out other than, oh, I have an empty hopper. I'm going to put coal in it and I'm going to send it to, and then it would get there and there'd be already two cars in the yard waiting to be unloaded. The downfall of not having JMRI, because JMRI would know where every car is, but unless you walk to the town and look to.
Well, and part of that too, Mike, is there an issue on car cards where there may get stuff just overloaded for any reason if a crew member decides, well, I'm just going to send all these to Arkwood or whatever it might be. Will that overload an industry to then create off spots because the car cards themselves have gotten out of balance?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And like I said, Tom Hokanson doesn't manipulate his way bills to balance. So you might have an industry that he would never send anything for 6 months because all of his way bills are already in the car card and they would just have to cycle through that industry, you know, once a month. You know, it might take a year for this, you know, sequence to physically clear out. You're chasing and pushing these cars around, swearing underneath your breath because this is the fourth time you've moved those four cars to spot some car on another lead.
Yeah, they're in the way in precious space on prototype and in modeling.
Yep. But then that adds that flavor that Greg was talking about is, I don't know, someone once said the yard master is cruel.
Yeah, it's the train master. Ken, you need to read that quote.
Yeah. It's gone now. My brain didn't remember it other than I like the cruelty of the yard master.
Yeah. Before I do that, though, just and I don't know if they do this anymore, but back in the 50s and 60s and into the 70s, they had what they called rollers.
Yeah.
And that was grain rollers and lumber rollers where they would be picked up by the railroad, but they wouldn't have a final billing spot. So the railroad would just slowly move them along from place to place, kind of knowing where they're going to go. But until there was an invoice, when they finally got the final destination, that the railroad would just kind of hang on to it. But to your point, off-spot cars are not new. They were quite an issue back in Shakespeare's time. In fact, in Macbeth, he wrote, "Out damn spot, out I say, two, three cars and room for only one. Whence then should I put these? Hell is murky, and the train master is cruel."
He was waiting all night to get that joke in. So
you're welcome. I had to roll it right out there.
You know. Sometimes the ace of spades is a camouflage.
Slap that down.
Well, the listeners only could see the gestures that Ken was providing with the two. It was epic.
That was great.
You know, back in my day, we used to have to read Shakespeare, you know, because he was almost a contemporary.
We just watched the movie now. So, Greg, I'll ask Greg this. On your Cary Avenue job, which is like not autos, not the brewery, it's the everything else. Do you ever have off spots for the food industries or some of the other places along that line? Does that job run into that issue?
You know, we've been talking about this right now. Yeah, so it's just the balance of the car cards sometimes gets out of whack, and there'll be cars that are left there. And so, like I said, we just put them on the passing side and we leave them there for the next time. We don't have I usually go around if things get really out of whack and adjust the way bills and the car cards. So that way, you know, I can kind of smooth things out a little bit. So you don't have this thing where you're trying to get 12 cars into a one car spot and you're waiting all year for it to clear out. But so you can, that's the one thing I like about car cards. You can just kind of go around manually and adjust that in between the sessions. But I just leave them on the passing siding along, you know, with the engine and the caboose. And I'm always a big fan at any place I operate, but that's the next guy's problem.
Mm-hmm. A problem passed on is a problem solved. So, yes.
But with that, Greg, do you ever run into, or you guys run into just too much excess and you can't get around your train or you can't move around because you've gridlocked yourself by hauling a bunch of off-spot cars into an area and now you can't get around your runaround and you've handcuffed yourself? Then what?
On my layout, no, because I, like I said, I walk around between sessions and just kind of make sure that's not, it's not out of control. The only time I've really been handcuffed like that on operating someone else's layout is if the place was just, it was just designed poorly. It's just too small. You know, there's a 2-car runaround and, you know, you bring a 12-car train in. This is just not going to work 99% of the time.
So it's not the spot, it's the design. Yeah, that's fair.
So, Joe, would you consider your little yard off the alleys to be the off spots?
No, because the alley card box has set out pickup off spot, and behind off spot, there's a divider and it's hold. So those cars, if you don't deliver them and you leave them in the alley, that's where you put those car cards. If you take them over into what we call the D yard, those cards and cars then go into the pockets that work with those particular tracks. There are people who complain that it's too hard, it's too tight, there's not enough room. You've got multiple places to hide cars if you want to. Quit your whining.
I think that was targeted at you, Greg.
I think it was. I feel slighted right now. Does Joe know that whenever I have too many cars on his layout, I just have a bulky sweatshirt and I just a few of them.
I thought you were going to say you're going to stick them in that yard Tom was asking about, because he said stick them anywhere. He said you could put them anywhere.
Remember to take the car card if you're going to take the car. So
put it up on eBay.
Yeah, right.
So you do have off spots for the alley though, because
yeah. Then you just leave them somewhere on the trackage in the alley.
So you leave them in the alleys, not over in that D yard.
Either way, whatever the crew wants to do. You know, if they're over in the alley, now you've or if they're in the yard, you have to get across the main, which may be busy when you're ready for it. If you have enough space, now you can leave them in the alley and they're right there for you. There is, quote unquote, a main line down these alley tracks, but it's, you know, the only train that goes up there is the switch job servicing them. So you can leave them on there as long as you don't block the cross streets.
That sounds like you're screwing.
I don't know, Joe. After your explanation, we might be leaving cars all over the place.
That's up to the switch crew. You know, if you make your work too hard, it's going to take forever. And then Tom will get all the donuts.
That's right. That's why I always pick that job.
I wonder why I haven't been back there in a year.
I'll get you on next session, Mike.
I'm going to take the off spots back to the main yard.
Yeah, that will cause problems with the yardmaster.
Yeah. I think all the off spots on Ken's layout can go to the Shakespeare Book Company. So it's just right next to the bowling ball factory on Mike's. So it'll be... All right, so we'll wrap it up and go around the horn here and let you guys tell us what you think about off spots, good, bad, indifference. Do you like using them? And Ken, Mr. Zeska, we'll go to you first.
I think that I'm going to continue to use them because I want to replicate the flavor of that end of the branch line, small town feel, where the agent is part of the community and the crew is part of the community, and they'll do whatever they have to do to give good service to the customers.
All right, Joe.
With all this talk about flavor, I'm starting to get hungry for dinner, so I'd like to, you know, get up there. I think it's in a 50s or 60s era railroad. I think it's key, and I think it, and especially in the small towns, happened all the time. So I'm in favor of flavors.
In favor. And Mike?
I have to agree with Ken and Joe. If you're in the 50s, the off spots were normal and part of the operation, and especially like a grain rush, they love their empty cars just waiting to be loaded versus waiting for cars to be loaded. I think it was part of the operation and it should be blended into how the railroad works.
Part of the flavor. Greg?
Yeah, I'm all in favor. Anything that makes, you know, gives the crew more interest, I'm all in favor of that. So I'll keep doing it.
Okay, good. And William?
I think off spots are horrible.
That's right.
Somebody's got to go against the grain.
That's right.
You guys are all nodding heads and everybody's like, I love off spots.
Who invited this guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do think that the overall vibe of having off spots, there's a time and a place for them. But I think, like Tom had made reference to, is kind of take into consideration what it might be. Or Greg even said, you know, those auto racks that are full of Ferraris, which I don't know if that ever existed, but it would be pretty cool for a load if anybody wants to do a Ferrari, you know, auto rack. But I think at the end of the day, it's just taking into account of kind of what is the use of it. I obviously look at the Nokomis Atkinson thing, and we look at the elevators, and we see a use for the agriculture to have those off spots. And at the end of the day, if you do have a critter or you have something else that can help switch in and out some of those off spots between sessions, or even set it as a separate job, it gives us as model railroaders just to kind of another unique element to kind of tie it all together. But collectively, I think the only one that was off spot was myself, because I was the only one that didn't like the off spots.
Well, I'll go last, and I'm going to say I don't like them. I think if the prototype did it, that's fine. But I think people operate too much with that. There's still the 20 pounds of mud in a 10-pound sack. Oh, just leave it off spot. And it gets in the way when you're doing runaround moves or sidings, or you're sticking things in there, or you don't know the rules. You know, like Joe imposes and stuff. I'm like, well, I'm going to switch my cars. That one's over there already. I'm just going to leave it there. You know, what's the difference between an empty box car and an empty box car?
Well, that's, empties are one thing. Loads are different.
Right. Well, his pockets are empty when he comes, and they're loaded when he leaves. Yeah. That's why he doesn't deal with off spots.
That's right.
Dust the hands together, problem solved.
The real question is, what color pins do you use for off spots?
That's right. I off spot pins, and Greg off spots cars into his hoodie pocket. Yeah, so
that's right. Clunk,
interesting
clunk.
Discussion. And anybody listening to this have a say on that, please give us your comments and what industries you use your off spots on, and if you like it or not. And with that, I think we'll say everybody can say goodnight, guys.
Goodnight, guys.
Goodnight.
Goodnight, guys.
Goodnight, guys.
Goodnight, guys.
You've been listening to The Crossing Gate, the official podcast of the Twin Cities Division. You can find us on Facebook in our group, the Twin Cities Division of the NMRA. You can email us at tcdnmra@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to subscribe for future podcasts.